His name is Lyle Pressler, punk rock legend and music industry vet. His name is Jim Shear, most tenured DJ in the history of music television. It's the Week in Music with Lyle and Jim, and it all starts now.
Hello there, everybody. My name is Jim Shear.
And I'm Lyle Pressler.
And on today's episode, we see the return of Lauryn Hill, Led Zeppelin doesn't get their money back, some health concerns for both John Popper and Greg Allman. But before all of that, Lyle, you come in today with some breaking news about Ed Sheeran.
Yes, I do. So I think we remember that Ed Sheeran is currently being sued.
Yes.
He's being sued for, what's this, a photograph?
Photograph,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's two songwriters in England who claim that they wrote a song that he lifted almost, you know, note for note.
And we listened to that a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there was four bars that were quite similar.
Yeah, I think so. And of course, it was a song on the radio, at least in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
So he's currently under that cloud, and now he's got a new problem. And the new problem is that the principal songwriter who's deceased for the song, the Marvin Gaye's classic, Let's Get It On,
mm-hmm.
has his estate is suing over the song that Ed Sheeran wrote called Thinking Out Loud. And they're claiming that essentially Ed Sheeran has lifted the melody, the harmonies, and the general composition of Let's Get It On to write his song Thinking Out Loud.
Do you hear the similarities?
Oh, I think it's clear.
Can I play both of them right now?
When your legs don't work like they used to before, and I can't sweep you off of your feet.
I've been really trying, baby, trying to hold back this feeling for so long.
I want to remind people of the basics of the law of copyright infringement here. And there are two initial hurdles that anybody claiming infringement has to get beyond. And the first is that they, in fact, own a valid copyright in the song. In this case, the song Let's Get It On. And clearly they do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fine. The second is, did the infringer, Ed Sheeran, did he have access to the copyrighted material? Clearly he did.
Sure.
Since
we all
Let's
do.
Get It On as a classic. So now what it's going to rest on is, does a ordinary observer, like an ordinary person, see substantial similarity between elements of the song?
So, can I stop you right there?
Mm-hmm.
I heard Thinking Out Loud on the radio probably 100 times over the last couple of years. Never once did I think of Marvin Gaye's Let's Get It On. So
really?
when you were listening to it, did you ever think of Let's Get It On?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You did?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, it's the whole vibe of it. I mean, and it is, I mean, I don't know if it's note for note. I haven't sat down and tried to figure out if it's note for note. But I think it very much evokes it, and it seems to follow it pretty closely. Now, obviously, there's going to be changes in the song.
Mm-hmm.
The chorus is different. I mean, there's differences to the songs. But the biggest problem for Ed, I think, and I'm not sure how it's going to play out, but the biggest problem for Ed is that in concert, he has actually done a routine where he plays his song and then morphs into Let's Get It On. So he's got a problem, man. I mean, yeah. I mean, when you acknowledge it at that level, and mind you, there has been commentary in the last year or so by people both in the press and online saying, hey, you think the thing he did with Photograph is bad. What about Thinking Out Loud? I think probably the best thing for Ed Sheeran to do at this point is probably just settle the case.
Yeah.
Don't let this go to trial. Don't let it get into that circus atmosphere the way the Zeppelin thing did. And, you know, the other thing, though, is that one of the reasons why Zeppelin won that case was because of the fact that there were so many... It turns out that really as we talked about, that figure in the song had been used so many times mm-hmm. that essentially you can't claim that somebody stole it from you because they stole it from somebody else who stole it from mm-hmm. It became almost uncopyrightable to begin with. Now, they didn't go as far as to say, you know what, Stairway to Heaven is now uncopyrightable. It's now public domain. But for the purposes of that Randy California lawsuit, I think that there was no way that they could actually say, hey, you know, it was borrowed directly from this.
Yeah.
And so it fell apart. You know, Jim, I was thinking the other day, we missed an enormously, well, I'm not going to say enormously because I don't want to set up a joke as being really funny. But if you remember the lyrics, the lyric to the Red Hot Chili Peppers' Danny California,
mm-hmm.
well, we should have changed the lyrics to, with a name like Randy California, there was going to come a day when he was going to sue you.
They should do that live. That would be great.
I know. It's great. I should call him up.
You should call up Ed Sheeran.
Yeah, exactly. I think he probably has really good counsel. I'm sure they're going to work this out. I don't see it being a huge problem down the line.
So as a prelude to the 42nd season of Austin City Limits, an hour-long Lauryn Hill special aired on Saturday. She performed classic solo cuts as well as Fuji songs and even did a cover of Nina Simone's Feel Good. I caught bits and pieces. At some point, I want to watch the whole hour, but so far, so good. A lot better than her hitless 2002 MTV Unplugged performance.
Yeah, that apparently was a bit of a disaster.
Although I run into so many people say it was genius, and I'm like, oh, come on now, man, she didn't do nothing. Yeah, it was all new stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are people out there in the world who perversely think that that's genius because, you know, oh, they didn't play what you expected them to play. Now we're back in the Radiohead argument all over again.
Yeah, play me some Fugees, damn it. And she did. The arrangement sounded great. And I like that Lauryn Hill seems to be taking a step in the right direction.
Well, I hope so because, you know, I think probably she ended up being one of the bigger disappointments mm-hmm. in terms of what happened. And I understand that there were a lot of, like, personal feelings and reactions and
life
stuff.
Life happens.
And then she got herself into all that tax trouble and whatever. So it'd be nice to see her come back and do some good stuff. So that sounds promising.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of Led Zeppelin, following the whole Stairway to Heaven copyright infringement case, which you alluded to moments ago, Led Zeppelin tried to recoup the $800,000 in legal expenses. They were unsuccessful. A judge ruled that the case was not, quote, frivolous, unquote.
Right. Well, I mean, the first thing to say is that, yeah, you can't recover attorney's fees if the case was brought legitimately against you, except in there are some lawsuits in which they provide for the recovery of attorney's fees. In this instance, the way in which they would attack that problem was to say, hey, look, these people brought a frivolous lawsuit against us, one with no merit, and as a consequence, we were forced to spend all this money, and that's a lot of money. I mean, that's somebody did well with that. And so they wanted to get it back. But the judge, of course, said, no, it wasn't. And the reason why it wasn't was because of the very fact that it was allowed to proceed.
Mm-hmm. So we shouldn't start a Kickstarter for Led Zeppelin.
I don't think it's necessary. Don't think so.
So, Lyle, you have a story on FTC guidelines regarding artist product endorsements. So
well,
take
this
me
is
through
sort of
that.
Well, this is sort of an interesting thing. Okay, so we talk about the FTC. We're talking about the Federal Trade Commission.
Mm-hmm.
And they regulate advertising, okay, in addition to general trade and commercial things. But advertising is one of the big areas. And, you know, the internet has changed everything. And social media has changed everything in the world of advertising. And, in fact, there was a recent confab, the yearly confab of advertisers. And there were a number of top advertising executives who basically said, we've got to figure out how to deal with this internet thing because, you know, pop-up ads are bullshit. They annoy people.
Mm-hmm.
Those things that you have to watch before you watch a Google, YouTube video. You
or
know,
even
you
get onto a website anymore.
Absolutely. And the point this advertising, these executives were making was, hey, listen, this stuff not only doesn't work, it actually infuriates
Yes.
People who are trying to sit through it. So we have to figure out a better way of advertising. And in fact, we have to start losing the word advertising. Let's not even talk about it, because immediately there's a visceral reaction for most people when you hear the word advertisement. So one of the things that they've tried to do is called product placement, right? I mean, that's the big thing. It's been going on for a long time. You try to get the Pepsi can. We get the Pepsi can in the Suicidal Tendencies video, okay?
Yes.
You know, and Pepsi gives some money for the video. So this has been going on forever, and it's nothing new, but the new concept is to actually get celebrities, and in this case, we're talking about musicians and YouTube stars and all the rest of them, to incorporate products into their presentations and therefore sell
Beats
the product.
Beats headphones.
Yes. And my daughter likes to go on YouTube and do these sort of craft things. And there's a number of these Maven girls who show you how to make all these cool crafts.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was really pushing, you know, let's make a Starbucks cup thing that's a piggy bank. And my daughter was like, oh, she loves Starbucks so much. And I had to tell her, no, Starbucks loves her so much that they're giving her money to do this. So I've already made my daughter, my 9-year-old, into a cynic, which is either good or bad, depending on your perspective. But the problem here was that artists, we're talking about musicians now, artists were accepting money from advertisers to incorporate products and present them as if it wasn't really an endorsement of a product so much as a personal thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Selena Gomez got reportedly paid over $550,000 to incorporate a product into various social media that she was running. Now, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Okay.
I take that. And the
problem is that one of the early guidelines the FTC had was, if you're going to do hashtags, you have to show in the hashtag that this is a product endorsement. Okay? But that was not really working out too well. So what the new rules that they've proposed are is that you have to actually disclose at the beginning of any of these social media posts, hey, what you're about to see is an advertisement. This is a paid sponsorship, okay? Now, advertisers don't like this at all, right? Because again, you're announcing, hey, here's Selena Gomez. She doesn't really like this. She's just doing it because we gave her money for it. Now, depending on your perspective, this is either a good thing or a bad thing. And it also may not even be a really workable thing, but that's beside the point. Now, artists have a struggle. They're not selling any records. They're not making any money off that. So they're looking for other ways to make money. And one of the ways to make money is to use social media and get essentially advertising dollars thrown your way to promote products and services. So that's how they're making money. So we're going to take some of that away from them again. So, you know, but the people who are probably the most upset about this are the advertisers, because
right.
they really thought this was a backdoor way into this marketplace.
Right.
And it may now be that you're going to watch an Instagram. I mean, you're going to watch a Snapchat or something, and it's going to have this big disclaimer at the beginning. You know, this person skating over 50 barrels of Budweiser got paid by Budweiser.
So on Friday night at BB&T Pavilion in Camden, New Jersey, more than 40 fans were injured when a railing collapsed at a Snoop Dogg and Wiz Khalifa concert. There's actually a video online, and it looks like they were doing a stunt where they were performing on a platform in between the pavilion seats and the lawn seats, and then all the people in the lawn pushed forward, and that's when the railing snapped. And the concert was canceled, although I think this happened at 10:30, so it was probably nearing its conclusion anyway. Have you seen the video for this?
No, I have not.
Scary, man.
Is it?
Yeah.
The only time I ever saw anything like this happen was at Irving Plaza, probably back in like 82 or 83, where the Bad Brains were playing, and there was a large PA stack, and it fell over, and a kid was very badly injured. I think maybe even paralyzed. I'm not sure. I tried to look up that story, but I couldn't find any reference to it online. But, you know, the problem is a lot of these things are inherently dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would urge concert goers to go in and be very careful, be very mindful of what's around them.
Yeah, because usually the railing for the lawn seats isn't as reinforced as the railing for the front of the stage.
Oh, okay.
And also, people are coming in at a slope, so they have some momentum going too while they go into the, you know, the cheaper railing. But did you hear last night there was another issue at this this tour stop?
No.
They said there were dozens of kids that had alcohol poisoning.
Oh man.
At the High Road tour.
Huh.
With Snoop Dogg and Wiz Khalifa.
Well, you know, it's funny. When Metallica played the Garden, and it probably would have been back in the late 90s, early 2000s, somewhere around there,
mm-hmm.
I went, and they had this whole thing where towards the end of the show, they pretended as if everything was falling, you know, breaking, and things were falling down,
mm-hmm.
and it was all sort of a stunt to get them to set up, like, to leave their main stage and set up and play like some hardcore numbers,
uh-huh.
you know, like in a little group. And it was funny. And, the roadies acted as if, oh, my God, look at the scaffold. It's falling. And I knew several people who ran out of Madison Square Garden thinking that it was an actual disaster. And, I mean, they did play it pretty well, but I kind of figured that it probably wasn't an actual disaster.
Oh, my gosh. So Blues Traveler have postponed their tour due to frontman John Popper needing emergency surgery. Apparently, he has 3 collapsed vertebrae and a leg injury, and Popper posted, if neglected as it has been, it would be far worse to the point of paralysis, so need to take care of this now. I'm a fan of Blues Traveler, not a obsessive fan, so I say, yeah, take care of yourself.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you want, I would figure that Blues Traveler probably has another 25, 30 years left in him.
Yeah. Take
you
care
know?
Of that
I mean,
now.
Seriously. And so, you know, you got to take care of that stuff.
Don't mess with the back. In a related story, Greg Allman has canceled all of his upcoming tour dates due to serious health problems. He's currently under doctor's care at the Mayo Clinic. Allman said, I want to thank my fans and friends for supporting me while I rest up and focus on getting better and back on the road as soon as I can.
Right.
There's health scares for John Popper and Greg Allman, but Bob Dylan seems to be having a great year. He's playing the mega concert Desert Trip in October. Now it's happening over 2 weekends. And then following that, the 75-year-old Bob Dylan is going out on a 27-date fall tour.
I have to say, like, if you had gone back in time, let's go back to, say, 1970,
mm-hmm.
would you have picked Bob Dylan as a road warrior?
No.
I mean,
well, even
no
like,
way.
Didn't he have a huge health scare 15, 20 years ago?
I think he did, but, you know,
where we thought he was going to die?
Yeah, but he's just cruised.
I know.
People don't even realize. I remember a number of years ago a guy saying to me he was actually booking Bob doing some stuff, and I mean, I didn't pay any attention to what Bob Dylan was doing, frankly, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh yeah, he's doing this, and then he's doing Europe, and then he's doing Asia. And I'm like, are you kidding me? That guy's out there doing all this? He goes, oh man, he does, you know, 200 dates a year. I'm like going, what? Which is fantastic for him. But we ought to talk for 1 second about this Desert Trip thing. Okay. Because I went online to look at tickets for this.
Yeah.
Have you seen this? Do you realize what people are paying?
No.
Okay. The max ticket for the 3 day, I think it's 3 days, right? The max ticket, and this is going to be in the front row, okay?
Okay.
Is $7,500. Okay. If you want to pay for, they have a standing room area at the foot of the stage. If you want to pay for that, you're talking about $5,400 for one person. If you have that much money to spend on seeing The Who, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
then you need to look seriously at your charitable giving. Okay?
Yeah.
I mean, in all seriousness. I mean, listen, I don't tell people how to spend their money, but I'm doing it now. That is ridiculous. Anybody who pays that kind of money to sit there is absolutely out of their mind. Completely out of their mind. And knowing that these musicians who are already multi-millionaires are getting more money off it,
more millions.
I mean, their children are already set. They'll never have to work if they don't want to. Mm-hmm. Maybe their grandchildren won't have to work, mm-hmm. which I don't begrudge any of that. They made their money. Yeah. It's great. But you as a consumer need to seriously look at yourself in the mirror and ask yourself whether or not maybe you ought to give that to a food bank or at least half of it.
Okay, so we are going to take a break, and when we come back, we have a new game that we're going to play, the Book of Lyle, the Book of Jim.
I get it. Yeah. I run New York. I get it. Yeah. Yeah. I took quarter water, sold it in bottles for $2. And Coca-Cola came and bought it for beans. That's for some. Have a baby by me, baby. Be a millionaire, I write the check before the baby comes. Who the hell cares? I'm stanky rich. I'ma die trying to spin this kid. Southside's up in this bitch. Yeah, I smell like the boat. I used to sell soap. I did play the block, now I play on boats. In the south of France, baby. Sandro Pay, get a tan, I'm already black. Rich, I'm already that. Gangster in a lane. Hit a head in a hat. Call that a little rap. Yeah, quit the chit chat. The big bake the bread. A barber, I cut your head. A marksman.
All right, everybody. Jim Shear and Lyle Presler on the Week in Music. Lyle, I've got a new game today.
Uh-oh.
In case you're sick of the carometer.
I love the carometer.
Or the yay, a, or nay. This is
the Book of Lyle, the Book of Jim.
So let me explain. In this segment, I will read some news stories, and according to the Book of Lyle, or the Book of Jim, we will give a few profound words on each. Make sense?
Yep.
Okay, here goes. So the internet got very excited this week when Frances Bean Cobain posted a short snippet of her singing and playing guitar to Jimmy Eat World's The Middle.
Take some time, little girl, you're in the middle after everything will be just fine.
Courtney Love responded on social media by telling her that her father would be proud. The performance will not win any singing competitions, but I think the news here is that Frances Bean can play some guitar and half decently sing. So how is this written in the Book of Lyle?
Wait. I have to ask a clarification.
Okay.
Is this not 4 seconds long?
Yes.
Okay. So let's put it in the proper context.
Well, that's why I said she can play some guitar.
4 seconds worth.
Yeah, some.
Yeah, well, I mean, my daughter can play 4 seconds worth of guitar. I mean, I'm just saying, like, we don't know what this is, actually. In the Book of Lyle, there's the first thing I'd like to say is, she is 24 years old. She has had perhaps one of the roughest possible childhoods that you could think of.
True.
For someone in the public eye.
Sure.
Now, I'm not, now, people who've had much rougher childhoods than that, but you know, deprivation and injury and the rest of it. But she has been someone who I think many people, rightly so, have been very protective of,
mm-hmm.
Because of the circumstances. I think it's great. And we all, I don't know if people know, she's also a visual artist,
mm-hmm.
and has been selling some of her works, which are, I would put in the sort of macabre, grotesque category.
Right. And she produced the Kurt Cobain documentary.
Well,
or was a producer on it.
Yeah. Like, I'm a producer on things too. But, you know, okay. You know, my secretary's a producer. But be that as it may, she clearly is a person who has some talent and wants to show it. And I think it's wonderful that she decided to, you know, post a little bit of her music. I mean, her playing, you know, her performing. Now, what could be gleaned from this, I can't imagine. Because, again, it's 4 seconds. It's a cover. I don't know what it is. The only other comment I would make about it, but I hope that whatever she wants to do, she can do, and she can be valued for who she is as a person and not who her parents are,
mm-hmm.
or were, because that's really important. She shouldn't have to carry around that weight, and we've seen so many people have to carry that weight.
Mm-hmm.
And it's inevitable, but at the same time, we have to, as a public, let her have a chance to break free of that and be her own person. I think it's very important.
Mm-hmm.
The only other comment I'd make is that, you know, why does Courtney feel the need to respond via social media? Like, can't she call her daughter up?
That's true.
Like, it's a show. I mean, it's a show. That's what it is. It's a show. It's a Kim Kardashian
style
show.
Is it a
show.
Way to sort of boost her confidence? Kind
well,
of
yeah,
put the spotlight on her?
But
maybe as a mother, she thinks that she needs the spotlight. She
you'll
needs
have
this.
Jim, you'll have your chance at your book. Okay? As I understand the rules of this game. What I'm saying is, sure, she should boost her confidence. And I'm confident that Courtney has done that, okay, over the years. As messed up as Courtney has been at times, I know she loves her daughter, and I'm sure she's boosted her confidence. But do you have to do that via social media for the world to hear? That's the question. And it's innocuous. I mean, mind you, it's innocuous. Your father would have been proud. It's innocuous. But at the same time, we are now, you realize that we are participating once again in the social media game.
The world revolves around social media.
And for the internet to go all aflutter over this is a little bit ridiculous.
And maybe millennials, you need to respond to them on social media. Because if you call them up, they say, well, it doesn't mean anything. I can't quantify it.
Well, yeah, but then that they have a serious problem. Because let me tell you, for every Francis Bean, there's some other person you've never heard of who's never going to be famous.
Yeah.
So stop trying.
Okay. So in the book of Jim, before I give you my official profound words, I think it's cool that she chose the middle from Jimmy Eat World. So she didn't do a grunge song. She didn't do a pop song. People respect Jimmy Eat World, but this song was played on MTV, so she probably grew up liking it and singing it. So I like her song choice. I'm starting to sound like Simon Cowell now. I really like your song choice. So I'm taking up my...
twat.
I'm taking up my quill pen. And this is how I'm writing it in the Book of Jim, Nirvana, The Force Awakens. So for years, I've been waiting for Frances Bean to play guitar. She could play crappy guitar. I just want to see what she got because she looks like her dad and she looks like her mom. So I don't care if she sucks because every time she opens her mouth, it's going to kind of remind me of Kurt Cobain.
Okay, are you done?
I'm done.
That is so unfair, man. I mean, that is just ridiculous.
I can't help it.
It is ridiculous.
I can't
just
help
because
it.
Those are her parents. Like, maybe she wants to be a volleyball player, or
well,
maybe she
can.
Wants to be a lawyer.
But she but, played. I mean, she finally posted something.
Well, I know that, but what I'm saying is your own expectations for her are ridiculous. It's the same thing that dragged down Julian Lennon and the rest of them. I mean, come on. It's like... First of all, there's no evidence that whatever genetic traits are in there are being passed down like that. It doesn't work like that. Anyway, okay. I would just like to say, let's let her be her and let's
exactly.
leave it at that.
And she
if
can,
she wants to play, great.
Yeah, she can play volleyball, that's fine. But by doing this on social media, it indicates that maybe she's interested in, you know, making music.
Maybe well, so.
We'll see. All right. Next topic, Snoop Dogg and Martha Stewart. Let me say that again. Snoop Dogg and Martha Stewart are teaming up for a VH1 show called Martha and Snoop's Dinner Party, which will feature a rotating cast of A-list celebrities. A press release read, Martha and Snoop's Dinner Party will redesign the traditional food competition shows in a new, different, and very funny way. How is this written in the Book of Lyle?
Well, the one thing I'm looking forward to at some point, I hope I live long enough, is to read the biography, the authorized biography or autobiography of Snoop Dogg. Because this guy, I mean, talk about a transformative life. Like, if you go and look through the past with this guy, it's just astounding to me that he has become such an incredible mainstream fixture in our society, despite everything,
yes.
really.
Yes.
I mean, it really is. I'm saying this not with an eye of like, oh, that's just horrible or it's ridiculous. No, I think it's incredible. And I would look forward to the day when I can read about all this stuff, including this newest thing.
Okay. So how I'm writing it in the Book of Jim, I will be always looking forward to the next episode. Reference to a Dr. Dre track right there featuring Snoop Dogg. Yeah, I'm curious. I want to say it can't ruin Snoop Dogg's cred because he can do anything. He's done this before. He's dipped into Middle America before.
Oh yeah, no. This is not a bad thing at all.
Yeah.
for anybody. I mean, this is all fine. I mean, Martha Stewart has reached the point where she's like the butt of every. I mean, they make jokes about her on the Food Network. They make jokes about her on the Chew show on NBC. I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's sort of the go to. It used to be Julia Child. Now it's like she's the go to person. But it hasn't hurt her at all. And I think it's actually meant that she can do pretty much what she wants. And I think Snoop is in the same position. He can pretty much do what he wants.
Yeah, and after the first few episodes, you'll be able to tell if the chemistry's there.
Well, that's it. I mean, it'll have to be chemistry.
Right, because if there's not chemistry, then it's just going one season long. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So finally, if you go to the high-end fashion retailer Barney's, you can get a Black Flag t-shirt for $265. The Joy Division shirt will only cost you $225. Lyle.
No, I'm going to let you go first on this one.
All right. In the Book of Jim, it is written down red flag, not to be confused with black flag, because if you're paying $265 for a punk rock t-shirt, it's against the whole thing, man, which back in the day you could have bought for $4.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in the Book of Lyle, this is completely insane, but not unexpected. Now, let me just talk about that $4 t-shirt you're talking about. They didn't cost $4 back in the day. As I recall, and this would have been 81 maybe, I recall that they cost maybe $10.
Okay.
And that thing about these particular t-shirts that was sold, at least on this tour, was that they were so cheaply made that you literally put them in the washing machine and they would disintegrate. They were apparently made in Pakistan. And people got very upset about this. I remember I didn't buy one, but I remember people being extremely upset at the destruction of their Black Flag t-shirts. It's insane, but let's sort of like give you a little bit of background here. If you don't know a lot about Black Flag, they were the brainchild of one Greg Ginn, guitar player, along with Chuck Tukowski, the bass player. And Greg also owned SST Records, which put out a lot of seminal punk rock records, including all the Black Flag stuff. The legal troubles that SST has gotten itself into and Greg's gotten himself into over the years are unbelievable. I mean, virtually everybody and their dog has at some time or another running afoul of it, including Husker Du and everybody you can think of. The members of Black Flag are essentially estranged from Greg. Greg nonetheless holds all of the title and interest in this stuff, and so Greg does what he wants to. I have it on pretty good authority that Greg is just doing this as a money play. But what I'd like to point out to you is to follow on your notion of the ridiculousness of this, is that the company that makes these things is a company called Madewarn. Now, I want to read you what they say about themselves.
Okay.
Madewarn is a luxury lifestyle brand founded in 2013 by artist, craftsman, fashion designer, and entrepreneur Blaine Halverson. Mm-hmm. The brand's romance with its history and in rediscovering the story behind products made to endure, not like those Black Flag t-shirts that fell apart in the wash. Halverson creates fine art, collectible fashion, and heirloom products, apparel, footwear, accessories, etc. Collections are available in Madewarn's appointment-only experiential store in Los Angeles, a 360-degree world where creators and connoisseurs meet in the designer's studio, cobbler's workshop, art museum, and concert space. Halverson is focused on what is the heart of the true luxury, spares no detail to deliver it. The 12,000-square-foot, it goes on like that. Okay, what that has to do with Black Flag, I have no earthly idea.
All right, so that wraps up the Book of Lyle and the Book of Jim. Time for birthdays now.
All right, so we have just a couple today, three. Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull, famous singer and flautist, is 69 years old. Ronnie Spector, the singer of the Ronettes, you know, Be My Baby,
mm-hmm.
and was married also to Phil Spector for a while, is 73. And Warren DeMartini, guitar player extraordinaire from the band Rat, considered actually one of the 100 best lead guitar players of all time by several publications, is 53.
All right. Happy birthday. The number one single on the Billboard Hot 100, once again, Cheap Thrills from Sia featuring Sean Paul. Number one album on the Billboard 200, Major Key from DJ Khaled. The number one song on iTunes, Let Me Love You from DJ Snake featuring Justin Bieber. Number one album on iTunes, Suicide Squad, the album. And the number one song on Spotify this week, Closer from The Chainsmokers and Halsey. We are going to take a break, and when we come back, Lila and I have our music picks of the week.
Dallas Coward, ride the cold. Rise above, we're going to rise above. Make this score what we say. Rise above, we're going to rise above. Try to stop what we do. Rise above, we're going to rise above. When they can't do it themselves. Rise above, we're going to rise above. Way up high, up your abuse. Try to stop us, it's no use. Society's out of control. Rise above, we're gonna rise above. Make this smart, can't think themselves.
All right, back from a short timeout. Jim Scheer and Lyle Presler with the Week in Music. Time now for our music picks of the week. So mine is a song called Tough Guy from a British group called Wild Beasts. And to me, it's part Muse, part Billy Squire. So I will play and then we can discuss. So here's Tough Guy from Wild Beasts.
Now I'm all fucked up and I can't stand up, so I better suck it up like a tough guy would. All of this vice we revel in is for love sometimes. Virtue won't get you where you need to get to. Got the spine to carry it, you know the route well, so you follow the old path to a new hell. Nothing will ever feel at home. No one will bring you what you want. Wasn't born a dick in a lung. What made you virgin killer? We'll be right back.
Tough Guy. Another reason I picked that is because this week Lyle and I were practicing a song called Tough Guy.
So I just think that's
it felt right. Yeah.
Yeah, it was sort of embedded in your brain. I like it. I think it's good. I think it's good. What exactly? I think I know what you're talking about. Well, why do you say Billy Squire?
I could imagine Billy Squire performing this song.
Take me in your arms.
Yeah, and then right? And then a hip hop group sampling it a few years later.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, although you know that video actually ruined his career. You know,
I know.
Oh, that's a famous. That's a wonderful story, actually. I mean, it's a terrible story, but it's a wonderful story.
Yeah, I remember. Well, I heard that Billy Squire opened for Kiss years ago, and then maybe it was 3 or 4 years ago. I wanted to see Billy Squire. So I ended up, he came to New York City, and he ended up playing some church on the Upper West Side where there were probably only 50 people there. And I felt bad because on the same night, Kiss was playing Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, man, you used to play with Kiss, and now you're playing in church, and they're playing MSG.
Yeah, but you know, but he still has a pretty good following, I think.
People.
Like, especially in the, you know, middle of the country and whatever, so... I mean, he's respected. I think.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I think his story was like a real. But I think his story was of the video was a real cautionary tale. For those of you who don't know, I mean, if you go back and watch the video, he sort of does this sort of white boy dance, and like it's in a bedroom, and it really what it did was it destroyed his rock credibility,
mm-hmm.
which he had carefully cultivated up to that point, and it signaled. But it also pointed out, and Jim, you've been so intimately involved in this, it pointed out that distinctive line between being a video artist with all that goes along with it. You got to look good. Mm-hmm. You got, you know, the presentation, as opposed to what we were before that used to, which were bands where you didn't really care what they looked like for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Stones were cool, you know, they were always cool. But for the most, and Jim Morrison and whatever, but for the most part, I mean, if Janis Joplin had to do videos, I don't know what would have happened. You know what I mean?
Like, mm-hmm.
it might not have worked out, but back then people just didn't care. Mm-hmm. They just didn't care about that stuff. MTV comes along, all of a sudden, you've got to bring it in every way, not just your music, you got to bring the visual.
Yeah.
And Billy failed at that, and that was... That was a downfall for him.
Yeah, but I love me some Billy Squire.
Yeah.
So what's your, well, you actually clued me in on this, but go ahead, your pick of the week now.
My pick of the week is a song called Suddenly by a thing called Drug Dealer.
Suddenly my mind is open. Thank you.
Yeah. You know what? I love this.
Well, you know, I'm just a dead sucker for this shit. I mean, seriously, like if it's Carole King, the Beach Boys in some of their iterations, or Lilies, or Apples in Stereo, I just, you know, I love that stuff. And I love the production. I love the fact that the horns are great. You know, it switches gears. It's just got this, I mean, at the end of the day, it's just, it's sort of my easy listening music.
Yeah, this is straight up 70s.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it would fit, aside from a few quirks, I mean, you couldn't take that song back to 1971 and make it work because it's just too quirky, because it's filtered through the lens of many, many years. Like, so it's taking elements of it and doing things with it. But to me, it's like, it just has that feel of, I don't know, when I hear that stuff, I just see these guys just sitting around in Los Angeles in a nice big room with a bunch of Oriental rugs on the floor and a bunch of exotic guitars and amplifiers just making this stuff up, bringing in horns, bringing in these guys. I just think it's really cool.
Yeah. So you're back on track with your picks of the week.
All right.
Yeah, well played, well played. So we're going to take one more break, and when we come back, it is time to Ask Lyle.
If you're in the game, well then the stroke's the word. Don't take no rhythm, don't take no style. Got a thirst for killing, grab your body. Woo! Put your right hand out, give a firm handshake.
Hey everybody, Jim Shear and Lyle Presler with The Week in Music. Time now to
Ask Lyle.
That's right, Ask Lyle. So Lyle, I've got a couple questions for you. We are in Olympic season, so my first question is, does Lyle Presler watch the Summer Olympics?
I have actually watched surprisingly I'm surprised that I've watched a fair amount of it so far.
So what do you think?
Well, you know, let me explain the reason why. The reason why is because my daughter has recently become very enamored of gymnastics, which I'm hoping won't take. Well, let me explain why.
Well, yeah, go ahead.
Well, first of all, if you talk to any parent of a gymnast, they will tell you the horror stories of getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and dealing with all of the things. I mean, because it's like if your kid plays ice hockey, you know, you have to have rink time. You have to have like it's ice time or ice skating. It's ice time. In this case, it's gymnastics. It's bar. You know, it's bar time and all the rest of it. And it's expensive. And frankly, most people are never going to be good at it. I mean, it's just never, because for one thing, there are enormous physical limitations. And for the other thing is, it looks like my daughter's going to be fairly tall.
Right.
And that will not work.
No.
And I've been very careful to point out to her when they show, you know, so-and-so 4'7". And I'm like, okay, you're already 4'7". Okay, so, and that person is 19 years old. So, you know, it's not gonna, you know, I don't want to crush anybody's dreams and all that stuff. And it's good physical activity, although you have to do it correctly because it can be very dangerous. But so I've been watching. So I knew the result yesterday at 3 o'clock of the women's team gymnastics.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't tell my daughter, and I let her stay up and watch it unfolding, you know, in quote unquote real time.
Mm-hmm.
So she was very excited about that. And the swimming, I have to say, the Michael Phelps story is an interesting story.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very interesting story. I'm not sure I like him all that much.
Right.
I think he's a little like cocky, and I think he kind of makes a lot of gestures, which I don't really dig.
Yes.
I mean, he almost did sort of a Manziel kind of gesture last night, which I thought was like kind of, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But just simply the story of this guy with all that's happened, you know, everyone sort of wrote him off in a way, mm-hmm. and he comes back and like at 31 years old, which is not old, but it is old in that sport.
Mm-hmm.
You come back and be able to do what he did is really impressive. And I also just like looking at these people's bodies, man, because it's like you look at them and like, okay, here's the body for a swimmer. That's what they look like.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the body for a gymnast. That's what they look like.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the body for a sprinter. That's what they look like. It's interesting how much your body style and shape
mm-hmm.
will work towards your ability to be able to do these things. And that's why, Jim, for years they used to say baseball was the most egalitarian sport. Because you could be tall, you could be short, you could be squat, you could be this, you could be that, and you could still play baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And even today, we see pitchers who weigh 300 pounds and look like they could hardly walk, yet they can throw the ball 100 miles an hour. So, but in these sports, there is no egalitarian nature to it. It's you're either the right person for the job or you're not.
You got it or you don't.
That's all there is to it. Yeah. So it's I don't know how much more I'll watch, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm not really into track and field, and I don't care about I don't care about watching the U.S. basketball team beat people by 50 points. I mean, that's just that's just not interesting to me.
Yeah, I'm gonna
try. How about
that.
You?
Yeah, I've
Did
been
you watching it.
I love the swimming.
Mm-hmm.
I will watch the gymnastics. I mean, we got the best team in the world, man. We got the best gymnast in the world.
Aside from the men, did not do well.
No,
they had a lot of promise, and it just didn't. It didn't happen.
Yeah, female team is great. I'm curious to watch Usain Bolt.
Yes, that is
be the fastest man in the world for a third straight Olympics. To me, that's crazy.
Well, he's also like this showman. He's sort of like the pit bull of track and field.
Yeah,
right? I mean, he gets up there with the dancers and he does all this stuff and he does these press conferences that are kind of crazy.
Because Phelps and Bolt brought me back to the Olympics. Because for years I grew up watching Carl Lewis and mm-hmm. Michael Johnson, and then for a handful of years all the sprints were close, and I thought, oh, this isn't fun anymore. I'm going to see someone blow someone out. And then when Phelps and Bolt did that in Beijing, I'm like, all right, the Olympics brought me back, baby. And my final question in Ask Lyle, this week our quasi-supergroup, Professor Booty and the Sure Shots, had our first practice together. For those that don't know, Lyle is playing guitar in my Beastie Boys cover band, Professor Booty and the Sure Shots. You can see us August 20th at Littlefield Art Space in Brooklyn for MCA Day. I thought the practice went well. The question is not about that practice. My question is, what is the worst side project that you've ever been a part of? And I hope the answer is not Professor Booty and the Sure Shots.
Ooh, man. Well,
and you can speak in vague terms too.
I don't want to offend anybody. I didn't do that many side projects. I was in a band. I was right after Minor Threat, as most people know. We tried to form this supergroup with Glenn Danzig, and it was going to be, you know, as a bunch of people from a bunch of different bands, and Brian Baker and I were going to do it as.
But it wasn't Sam Hain, right? This wasn't Sam Hain.
It wasn't Sam Hain. So it was going to be this different thing, and that completely fell apart. Like, it fell apart pretty much from the beginning, and sort of Brian and I got sort of left with Glenn, and then Brian dropped out of it because he was smart. And I stayed, and that became Sam Hain, and that didn't last very long. So, but before that, right out of Minor Threat, we had a band. Brian and I had a band called the 400, which was derided as being sort of an alarm style band, and it was bad. It was bad. Actually, a couple of the songs were good, but the whole thing just didn't work. And we actually opened for the Replacements, believe it or not.
Wow.
We opened for the Replacements at the 930 Club, and it was an inauspicious debut. But I think the worst experience I had was a couple years ago now, I was asked by Erie Vaughn, who was in Sam Hain and was in Danzig, to do a little acoustic performance, and all that was fine, except for the fact that we had zero rehearsal time. Like, literally, we rehearsed for 20 minutes before we went to the show.
Ooh.
And it was just three of us up there, two of us playing acoustic guitars and one guy playing bass. And it was tortuous. It was so bad. I was so embarrassed that I can't even. And it was for a book signing, because Erie had put out this book, so he wanted to perform, and he had a book of his photography, which is really, really good. I recommend it. It's a great book.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that it was such a letdown, because it could have been really good, and just the lack of time to work it out meant that it just was absolutely chaotic, and I was really embarrassed.
Okay.
So my apologies to Erie, and you know, but unfortunately, when you don't get rehearsal time, you can't exactly decide you're going to pick up and play acoustic versions of, you know, Danzig songs.
Yeah, so we're already ahead of the game, because we had a 3-hour rehearsal this week.
Way ahead of the game.
Yeah, man. All right. So I didn't make the worst of. Oh, that's great.
No, not in any way, shape, or form. I would encourage people to come, because I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I can't promise it's going to be perfect, but I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to be fun, and there, you know, you get to see Jim, and you get to see Jeremy, and you get to see me and Nico, and some other folks that Jim's got lined up, which is really honestly more exciting than us. But it should be good. I think it'll be a fun time.
Yeah. So once again, that's not this Saturday, but next Saturday, and it's a matinee show. So you can come to MCA Day, and then you also have your Saturday night to hit New York City and do whatever you want.
Well, no, you can hit Brooklyn and get to a small. You can go to a small plate restaurant, get some artisanal cocktails, grow a beard, wear a pork pie hat. Yes. You know, tell us in hushed tones about LCD sound system.
Yes, and the weather. The weather is supposed to be nice too. It's going to rain all next week, and it's going to be low 80s. So it'll be a perfect day to take you and your loved one to Brooklyn. For Lyle Presler, my name is Jim Scheer, and we will see yins later.
So long, farewell, I'll be the same tonight.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has just left the building.